This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Photographs that we pasted to the wall and then continue to paint on. And these photographs are photographs that reference our cultural history.
When you say large format, you mean they've been printed large?
Yeah, just large in size. We have photographs that are 8 feet by 4 feet.
Okay.
It's the largest.
And they were sourced from the internet?
Yeah, exactly. So we spent a long time looking through lots of historical catalogs on the internet, looking for the right images to use for the show and the right images to interact with painting in the gallery. So we pasted them to the wall of the gallery and then continued to do all of the actual painting in the space itself.
Mm-hmm. So you were literally standing in the gallery with paintbrushes.
Yeah, exactly. We actually spent basically an entire day and an entire night painting.
What? Just tell me a bit more about, you know, when you go in, you're presented with glasses. It's like going to a 3D movie.
Well, I had done a show last year that Modu actually curated at a space called Painting is Dead. And at that time, I presented paintings on canvas. But it was a poppy show, really bright paintings. I had played with the 3D glasses a little bit, and at that show, I presented the audience with 3D glasses sort of as a whim. I really liked the reaction that people had to it. I continued to work with that. I ended up doing a lot of research on the 3D glasses, and then we brought it back into this show because it played into our concept of digitalism, the idea of entertainment culture, and also I think it ties into the contemporary art context where we're talking about the ephemeral nature of contemporary art, and so the glasses create this sort of illusion of a 3D object, even though it's obviously an object right on the wall. Mm-hmm. And these paintings are, you know, right on the wall, so they're going to go away as soon as the show's down.
Right.
Right, yeah. When I got invited by Chris Moss, the curator of the Linfield Gallery, to do the show, I wanted to do something cultural and something that involves around, that's, you know, around ethnicity. So, and since I've been working with Devon for a while, I invited him to collaborate with me. And, you know, I like the idea of looking at art in a gallery context through a lens, you know. So we sort of borrowed this idea of this tradition of looking at paintings in the late 19th century through binoculars and bringing that back with the current technology, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we use 3D glasses and sort of like made this, put these chairs on displays, like this chair that have like quite a personality, you know, to sort of like encourage people to sit down and have a view. Like sort of like a viewing situation within the gallery space and the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are chairs in the room. They're all different chairs. And when I went to the opening, they were kind of arranged in a circle,
facing outwards
to the walls.
Right. I kind of wanted to bring this cultural context, this ethnic context, to a very contemporary, very information age, like art show.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to mix culture, history, you know, and ethnicity and contemporary art. So, and in African tradition, and I would suspect Spanish tradition, the chair means a lot, you know, like as a sitting, station, you know, like meaning that you see, you know, who you are is sort of portrayed by the chair you used to sit, you know. So that's why we have this diversity of chairs around the space.
Your status?
I'm sorry?
The status of the person is portrayed by the chair?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And also there's an entire history of the chair as an image in the history of art.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting that in the space itself, you know, references hundreds of years of art history.
Yeah. So the 3D effect is you without the glasses, they look like paintings of people. They're either boxes, African boxes,
mm-hmm.
or characters from Mexican history or mm-hmm. popular imagery.
Yeah, exactly. We chose basically a few pieces of cultural history from Mexican and Senegalese culture, respectively. So I was working with images of zoot suiters and lucha libre wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And then we were working with images of African boxers and soldiers and musicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think we wanted to have something fun to work with, you know, and sport is something very enjoyable, very masculine, and a lot of, you know, testosterone in the room, which we can mix with more of a layback sort of like, you know, sort of like contemporary aesthetic. So we chose to work with, you know, those elements basically.
Yeah, and I think the main, like Modu was referencing sort of the cultural references in the show, and I think all of these, especially the sport, is a really obvious reference to this clashing of cultures that I think we're both concerned with.
Right,
and
right.
So like the Lucha Libre clearly portrays a mix of Mexican culture and outside Western influence. I mean, Lucha Libre wrestling, the masks, actually, there's been wrestling in Mexico since the Aztecs and the Maya, mm-hmm. and then Lucha Libre is obviously a result of that culture mixing with Western culture.
Right, and we are coming from a post-colonial perspective, meaning that in the time of colonization, when the dominant culture or the dominant power would like to watch the dominé mm-hmm. fight,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
basically. And that's, you know, that's why you have this stigma of the black or the Spanish fighting in the ring, you know, to entertain, you know, like the Western culture.
Yeah.
So we kind of wanted to use that to sort of portray, you know, or sort of take action into post-colonial discourse, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. And is one of the theme of the show is that the star, right, or the superstar, or the hero of
right,
sport,
the anti-hero in the hero, because the person I chose to use as a boxer was actually the first world champion, you know, and
mm-hmm. what was his name?
Bartlan Siki, but his real name is Louis Barik Fall, and he was born in Saint Louis, which is a city in Senegal where I was born. And he migrated to France during the First War, or maybe just right after, and become a boxer and got the title of world champion and got killed because he was supposed to not, you know, win that fight, mm-hmm. and so. For some reason, he decided to go ahead and take the fight and win, and then he got killed. So that's somebody who got killed because he was a winner. Mm-hmm. So by dying pretty much right after his fight, he becomes this sort of loser. Mm-hmm.
And in the show, we use footage from Battling Siki's last fight, and we actually show, you know, we show he actually knocks out his opponent in that last fight. And so I made a video where I spliced together Battling Siki's last fight with all of these really dramatic images and clips of Lucha Libre wrestling.
Right.
And then I also mentioned the zoot suit culture, which ends up kind of talking about America as a cultural melting pot. And zoot suit, the images that I chose to use were images of zoot suiters in prison during the zoot suit riots in the 1940s. And so, like, zoot suit culture is a place where marginalized populations in America found an identity.
Right.
And so there's this huge clash between the white Westerners who are uncomfortable with that new identity and that changing demographic, and that changing demographic and that cultural clash
right.
and new cultures are things
right.
that we're both
basically finding an identity in a very uncomfortable place, mm-hmm. maybe, let's say.
And these pictures are of basically teenage boys in zoot suits in jail or sort of herded into a room because they've been arrested.
Right. Exactly. So during the 1940s, it was actually mostly military young white men, and the zoot suiters, as they were called, were clashing, and the young white men, particularly from the Navy, would actually attack the zoot suiters and strip them of their clothes. And so in 1942, there was these things known as the zoot suit riots, mm-hmm. In which there was a huge number of these zoot suiters arrested.
And that speaks of migration, that speaks of the notion, the question of the illegal in America mm-hmm. currently, you know. So it's like touching a little bit of history to sort of point out what's going on, you know, right now, you mm-hmm. know, in terms of identity and politics.
Right. I'm Joseph Gallivan, standing in for Ava Lake. This is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guests are Modu Dieng and Devin Van Houten Maldonado. They are professor and student respectively at Pacific Northwest College of Art, and their current show is at the Linfield Gallery at Linfield College in McMinnville, and it runs through March 16th. The 3D effect is simply the spectrum is sort of broken up, right? Anything red stands out forward.
Yeah, exactly.
And what else?
So the glasses that we present at the show are called ChromaDepth glasses, and mm-hmm. ChromaDepth is a corporation. You have to buy the glasses from them. It's a patented lens, and exactly, each lens basically has prisms in it. These lens are polarized prisms that essentially break the color spectrum up break colors up according to the spectrum. So red will always be the furthest forward, blue will always be the furthest back, and the result of that result comes from your brain doing something called stereoscopy, which is the way that our brains perceive depth. And so essentially what happens is that one eye sees more red and one eye sees more blue.
Very scientific, huh? No, yeah, it's, you know, like we wanted the work to operate as screens because most of our life now is happening through the screen, whether it's mm-hmm. a computer or the cinema or the television. So we wanted to sort of borrow that, you know, domestic sense of viewing into like the gallery space and bring the people with what they are used to, but, you know, in an art context, you know. So
yeah.
Have
you ever seen a 3D movie, like, you know, the theater?
Yes, I have. Yeah,
what,
I have.
What kind of movies have you been to see?
Oh, I think I saw Lord of the Rings in 3D. What was that crazy alien movie?
Right, right. I saw that one. Avatar.
Actually really, really amazing.
But the Queen of England, you know, she did her New Year,
address. The nation.
Yeah, using the 3D technology, right?
Really?
Yeah. For the first time in history. Yeah,
I mean, I think the 3D is really interesting. It talks of, you know, there's so many devices these days. Like now we're starting to get these 3D TVs and all these things that are trying to imitate objects. And I think there's this really fascinating thing happening in art with new media,
right,
where there's these ephemeral media.
Right.
And I think, you know, as artists, it's our responsibility to talk about these contemporary things.
Right, and you see better, and you have the perception that actually that the work is surrounding you. It's overwhelming. It's pushing you in and out, you know, mm-hmm. very quickly, you know. So you see better.
And also, I think it just forces you to actually look at the work actively. So you're not passively experiencing.
Right, that's why we call the show an interactive installation. Because there is this interactiveness, you know, like you allow yourself to see more or to actually go somewhere in the work where, you know, just your eye, you know, just like without the glasses, you wouldn't be able to go to.
Right. So, yeah. You mean actively looking, you look in and out of the depth of the picture?
Yeah, well, you have to choose to look at the picture through the 3D glasses. And then if you choose to investigate further, you can start to play with the 3D glasses. Like one of the things that I love is watching people try to understand how it works. And I see them closing one eye, closing the other eye, taking the glasses on and off, approaching the painting closer. And what I loved about this the first time I did this is it was the first time I saw someone really, really looking at my paintings for a long period of time.
Oh.
And I really, that as an artist was just really rewarding, mm-hmm. seeing someone really taking the time to engage with your work like that.
Right. There is just a surprise effect that is added to the, you know, to the art, you know.
But could they be looking at it for a long time for superficial reasons rather than accessing the meaning?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if we can answer that question. I think it's for the viewer to say.
I think people engage with art for different reasons. I think some people engage with art purely for superficial reasons, because it's beautiful or because it's entertaining or surprising, and other people want to investigate further, and I think the 3D glasses gives them the opportunity to do both.
Mm-hmm. What surprised me was that they were not canvases. You know, took me a few minutes before I realized they were just flush with the wall. And that's when I thought, okay, how are they going to save these and sell them? You know, how are they going to retain their value? So what was the
like that, that's my sort of choice of working, you know, in terms of dealing with the gallery space, because I like to create a situation rather than creating a product, mm-hmm. rather than creating an object. Because when the situation is there, then the people are forced to take time and spend time because they know they won't see it again. You know, so so when it's done, it's done. It's like, you know, flipping a page on the internet. You know, if you move on, it's gone.
Mm-hmm. And I think it plays into a larger concept that we're concerned with, where we're talking about how we catalog and understand history using the internet.
Right.
And this show is going to exist digitally after it's taken down. We'll document the show. It'll exist on the internet just as the source images we used
right.
it. So mm-hmm. we're effectively taking these images, affecting them the way we want, and putting them back on the internet, which is the original source of them.
Right.
Right.
So it just sort of completes the concept, I think, more than selling them would.
Right.
Right. But will you be there when they get chiseled off the wall?
I don't think so.
Sorry, Chris.
That'd be nice to document that, though. Huh?
It would. It would be nice.
What kind of music do you listen to, Modu, when you're working?
Well, I like any kind of music. I like sound. Let's say I like sound. But of course, you know, in this case, you know, I've been working with Devon for quite a while, and you know, I get the chance to listen to his music and also, you know, show him what I listen to. And most of it was around, you know, black music, African music, American music, black American, and let's say from like folk, you know, to hip hop, you know, what we call in Africa world music. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, we're gonna listen to a track. By a guy called Sheklo.
Yes.
And the track's called Sheikh Ibra Fall.
Right, right.
Okay, that was Sheklo's track called Sheikh Ibra Fall. And where's he from? And
he's from Senegal, and he's one of the few Senegalese artists or even African artists who got the chance to live in many places in Africa. So he speaks many languages and have many sources of influences in terms of sound and music. And that's why I like his stuff. And this song is about a man who lived in Senegal in the early 20th century. And he dedicated his life to help other people. Basically, he would work for free. And since then, he has followers, which is now a fraternity that I'm a part of.
Oh, you're a part of it?
Yes.
Okay. But the musical artist, he's contemporary?
Yes. He's contemporary, yes. And he worked with Peter Gabriel and Youssoundour, mm-hmm. you know, and produced some stuff around the world. And he's quite... you know, quite out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and Devon, do you want to play a track? Just tell us a bit about what you do musically when you're working.
Well, I can't emphasize enough how important music is to me in general. Music is one of my biggest sources of inspiration. I listen to loud music all day, every day.
With headphones?
With headphones, with speakers. I have speakers in every room of my house, in my studio. One of the main things I listen to is hip hop, but again, I love every kind of music. I've been a musician for my entire life, and music is just a foundation of my life.
Mm-hmm. You're a musician too?
Yes.
Well, what do you do?
I took a lot of music classes when I was growing up. I started playing the violin and the saxophone, and then I ended up playing piano for the longest. So I took piano lessons for about 10 years. When I was in high school, I started playing a lot of like synthesizers and more fun, weird sounding keyboards, started experimenting with sound a lot more. And I actually did a sound piece for this show that goes with the video. And so now what I'm doing is a lot more about sound and texture and producing stuff specific to a setting or a mood.
Right. And that's just for what, how do you distribute that? I mean,
I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
Do you play live or do you make mixtapes?
Well, I do play with a band, that...
Well, your art practice is taking a lot of your time.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played live music in a long time. When I was young, you know, I was in choir, I played in bands. But recently, my music practice is more of a studio practice where I'm in my studio with headphones and a recording mixer and, you know, music production software and, you know, really just making stuff as a producer rather than as a live performance artist. I'm not necessarily interested in being a live performance artist anymore. I was at one time.
Okay. Well, let's listen to a track called Happiness, and it's by a band.
It's a group.
A group?
A hip-hop group called...
Foreign Exchange. Yeah. Okay, that was Happiness by Foreign Exchange. Devin, just tell me why you selected that. It's very mellow.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason I selected it. I would in the last few years, as I started painting more and more and working in my studio more and more, I sort of started listening to a lot of music that has that really mellow vibe. And the Foreign Exchange is actually, they're a R&B group, and this is just the instrumental track. And so this is off of an album called The Foreign Exchange Connected Instrumentals. So there's no vocals on the track, and I think when I'm working, I like to listen to instrumentals because the vocals can't necessarily influence what I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
And the instrumental sort of allows me to just really, really dive into the painting without singing along or being distracted by words or concepts outside of what I'm doing. When I listen to music and paint, I feel like all of my senses are in it, and it becomes, in a way, a really transcendental experience where I feel like the music and the painting and sort of become synonymous and sort of are all working together.
Mm-hmm. And you said something very interesting, that you've got your Moleskine notebook here. You when you want to do a painting, you write about it first?
Yeah.
Rather than sketch?
Yeah. Whenever I paint, I will usually think of, you know, again, like music is so influential to me that I'll probably think of even a sound or an image or a concept, and think of a painting will occur to me, and rather than sketching it, which I always find unsatisfying, I feel like I can describe it better in words, whereas like I can come back to those words, understand the idea that I had, mm-hmm, better than I can if I make sort of a crude sketch of it. Whenever I make a sketch, I don't feel like it translates very well into the work. I would rather just, if I'm going to make something, I'd just make it. Like this show we just did is really immediate. We just put these, we put these images on the walls and we painted them. And it's the same thing with me in painting. I'll write about an idea I have, but when I make the painting, I just make it. I don't right. spend a lot of time planning it out.
Right. So Modu is your professor, correct? He's your teacher? Would you say that?
I don't know. He's not my teacher right now, but he's my mentor right now. But okay. I did meet him in class. I walked into his... I had him in a class called Experiments in Drawing, in which we just talked about new ways of making. And, you know, Modu pushed me to just try new things and experiment and make discoveries with painting, which... was new to me at that time. You know, I think I was 19 years old and had just started taking art very seriously, and Modu helped to transform the way that I make art, and he's been a big influence and a big mentor to me.
Mm-hmm.
So no, like we went to Africa together. So and
it oh, was, where did
yeah,
you go?
Yeah, we went to Senegal together,
mm-hmm,
and we spent a month there during the festival, the Festman, the World African. The what was it? The Biennale or the Festman?
It wasn't the Biennale. It wasn't the Biennale.
Right. So and he did an amazing work there on a mural that was quite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did a mural at a recording studio out there. So again, there's that sort of circle with music and art.
Mm-hmm. That was a biennial, did you say?
It was the third, I don't quite remember exactly what it means, Festman, but because it's in French, but it's pretty much you know, a world meeting of, you know, African artists of African descent.
Visual arts.
Yes.
Yeah, fashion and music and art and a lot of different kinds of art.
So your approach to art, everything seems to have multiple layers of meaning and discourse, and talking about it is almost part of the art, I think.
Right, right.
So how did you convey that to him? Or did you...
Well, I like to collaborate with artists, and I found that he has a very unique way of mixing stuff, you know, like doing collages, connecting sound and visuals and informations and videos. So, you know, to me, it was more of a vocal conversation with Devon, you know, than anything else, you know. So that's why we sort of chose to take the gallery space as a ring, where we can both come in and sort of like sort it out, you know.
So, yeah. This is Joseph Galvan. This is Art Focus on KBOO. Our guests this week are Modu Dieng and Devon Van Houten Maldonado. So, Modu, you have plans for a triennial. You're going to bring international artists to Portland. What's it going to be called, and when's it going to happen?
We are just in the preliminary phases, and basically, which is like to convince people that this is worth doing and find money for it and get it done. So I would like to do that because you know, I guess we have a lot of things here in Portland, and it's a good way of using, you know, the brain in Portland, because basically so many artists, so many things going on, but we don't have really the opportunity to engage that conversation with the outside world, which is basically what I'm trying to make happen. Since I've been, you know, traveling for quite a while, 15 years doing my art and working around the world, I do know people, and I would like to share that with the people I know here and sort of like bring more of a global international conversation to Portland.
Yeah. So, you know, we've had Pica does a TBA that sort of brings in international artists. Would it be along that kind of scale? Are you thinking bigger?
Right. You know, like, you know, along that, you know, along TBA, yes. Sort of like... Yeah, people have been asking me a lot of questions about TBA and PICA and how it's going to look within what we are trying to do, you know. And my way of perceiving it is that PICA is bringing, you know, a lot of wonderful things to Portland and for Portland. And I'm trying to get something done that would sort of bring people to Portland to witness what we are here and who we are and what we do here.
Right. So the viewer would come from outside the city as well. Right.
Right. Like, mainly if we succeed, that means we succeed by bringing 5 to 10 to 30,000 people to Portland to see this show.
Okay. So this is Joseph Galvan on KBOO Art Focus. Our guests this week were Modu Dieng and Devon Van Houten Maldonado. Their show runs at Linfield College in McMinnville until March 16th. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Andy Warhol is a sure scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
A bill passed yesterday by an Oregon State Legislative Committee approved a plan to build a $4.5 billion bridge from Portland to Vancouver, known as the Columbia River Crossing. The plan would require $450 million in bonds to pay for the bridge, but the committee did not offer any solution as to how Oregon would pay the $30 million in interest it would have to pay each year.
The man shot by Portland police this past Sunday outside Portland Adventist Medical Center was identified as 50-year-old Merrill M. Hatch. He was a patient at the center but walked out, pointing a gun at hospital employees and security before being shot at by 3 police. An autopsy was scheduled this morning.
A new audit of Portland's transportation found that 1/3 of Portland's roads are in poor condition. Roads in poor or very poor condition cost up to 10 times as much to fix. The auditor's office estimates a cost of $750 million over the next 10 years to properly maintain Portland's streets.
A radioactive waste tank is leaking at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation up in Hanford, Washington. The tanks are already past their 20-year lifespan and hold radioactive stew from production of plutonium for nuclear weapons decades ago. There is added pressure to contain the waste so radioactivity doesn't flow into the Columbia River.
The U.S. Supreme Court today announced their intention to review a case that would allow unlimited campaign contributions by individuals. McCutcheon versus the Federal Election Commission argues that putting a cap on what individuals can donate to political action committees and parties is a violation of freedom of speech. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of the plaintiff, the ruling could be another Citizens United, which allowed the creation of super PACs to finance election campaigns. According to the United Nations, there were 72% more drone strikes in Afghanistan last year. 16 Afghan citizens were killed last year alone by drones, up from one the previous year. Overall, the number of civilian casualties in Afghanistan went down last year, but the number of those killed by drone strikes went up.
This is Desiree Garcia.
And this is Rob Shryock with KBOO News.
You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
Tune in Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m. to hear Buck Parker, the strategic advisor at Earth Justice. He is speaking in Portland that night, and KBOO will broadcast the speech live from the First Congressional Church in downtown Portland. This is the second talk of the 2013 Illahi series. Again, that's Buck Parker speaking on Who Owns Our Environment, broadcasted live on KBOO, Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m., only on KBOO Portland.